This week on the Barag World Show, we're joined by Jerry McGovern to discuss how we should be building great experiences for our employees too. This week, the show is sponsored by Media Temple, Harvest, and all shitty intranets everywhere. Hello and welcome to BoagWorld.com, the podcast for all those involved in designing, developing and running websites on a daily basis. My name is Paul. I was going to say as always, like it changes sometimes, I don't know. And joining me as always, that's what I normally say, is Marcus. Hello Marcus.
Hi Paul. I remembered your name.
You did, well done. It's been one of those weeks. And we're being joined by Jerry McGovern. Hello, good to have you back, Jerry.
Oh, thanks for the invite, Paul. Always glad to be back.
Ah, it's good to have you on the show. Now, I need to apologise straight off the bat. Ooh. Because I have a little electric heater going under my desk that may make noise through this podcast, but you would have to come in and prise it away from my hands before I'm turning it off. Because we have no heating in our house and we've had no water either.
So you smell as well?
Well, we no, because you know the answer to this, Martin. Jerry, you would be embarrassed of me. Do you know what I did? So our heating originally went, and the plumber came round to have a look at what the problem was. And when he went away, he'd broken the hot water too, which was great. Yeah. And so my solution to this problem is possibly the most middle class behaviour I have ever done.
I'd call it extravagant, Paul.
Well, it's more than... we went to a hotel. We just gave up on our house and moved out into a hotel. So I've literally just got back.
Okay.
Bit of an extreme response, but, you know, it worked.
Now and then.
So how are you, Jerry? How's life with you?
Very good, Paul. Good. You know, still doing the same stuff of... You know, trying to understand customers and make it easier for them to do what they've came to do. There doesn't seem to be any shortage of those needs out there in the marketplace.
Yeah, I keep waiting for the time where everyone's got it sorted and we're out of a job. I don't think that's going to happen anytime soon, is it really?
No, not for a while. I sometimes say when I travel, I say, you know, that I've been in a lot of countries, maybe 35, 40 countries at this stage, and nobody's ever said to me, help us become more organization centric. You know, we're too focused on our customers. It's never going to happen. I mean, the natural state of things is to get focused on the organization and the ego of the organization. And it's a hard thing being customer centric.
It is, actually. Yeah, and because you're right, our kind of default position is to look internal, isn't it? It's to look at ourselves. So, you know, being customer centric is a tough one.
It means different departments have to talk to each other. That's one of the reasons why it's difficult, because they don't like doing that.
Exactly.
You don't want to talk to other people. No. They're strange. They want they're trying to take over the company and push their agenda. Well, you're just trying to be reasonable and get on with life. Not that I'm cynical. Hey, talking about travelling, Jerry, you seem to be all over the place at the moment.
Well, a bit, Paul. I'm just actually back from Vienna, and it was interesting to see where they are. You know, they acknowledge, it was interesting, they say, you know, the Austrians, they like, a lot of Austrians' aim in life is to get paid well and stay under the radar, you know.
Very sensitive.
Not be known for anything spectacular or anything like that, and perhaps the professionals there, the user experience or the customer experience or the content professional, were a bit frustrated with the lack of ambition or the lack of the things they felt were changing too slowly in their environment. But then the previous week I was in Norway, which I think is much more witted or much more progressive. Mm-hmm. Not that you know, Austria is behind the scenes by any by a modern concept, but they're, you know, they feel that they're lagging a bit. But I sense in places like Norway and Scandinavia in general, they really are pushing the boundaries, not so much of the technology, but of the social engineering mm-hmm. that goes along with it, the more collaborative type of workplaces and cultures that I think is most optimal to really benefit from the whole digital revolution.
Mm. I mean, culture is a big part of it, isn't it, really? You know, if you're, you know, you're in a culture which is naturally hesitant, that is naturally well considered, then you're going to have bigger challenges than you are in a kind of faster moving, more dynamic environment. And whether that be culture on a national level or culture within an individual organization, it makes an enormous difference, I think.
Oh, it's the essence to me of the whether you'll have success or or failure. And you know, seeing that today we're talking more about the intranet or the enterprise side or the digital workplace. One thing I hear coming back constantly is that, you know, we need to be more collaborative. This is particularly a message coming back from senior managers. We need to be more, you know, collaborative. There's this hope that if they do this digital transformation, if they install all this software and technology that allows them to share and chat and collaborate, that they will automatically become that collaborative thing. And there's no doubt that technology can help for sure. But if you have a culture which doesn't want to collaborate, where, you know, Marcus was saying there about where departments see each other as rivals or for budget or otherwise, you know, and if you have structures in place which punish collaboration, like one department charges the other department for any time or effort or conversations or meetings they have. So, you know, if you don't have that structure and culture that really wants to collaborate, you know, all the technology in the world isn't going to make a difference.
Yeah, no, it's totally true. How did you get into this kind of area of looking at internal systems and the impact of digital internally? Because, you know, most people that you encounter are kind of focused on the external, and I know you do a lot of work in that area as well, but I'm just kind of interested, because I would if it's a completely selfish question, because I'd love to do more of that kind of stuff. I find the internal benefits that digital can provide an incredibly exciting area, but I'm not coming across many people that are willing to take it seriously, really.
You know, well, you're right. You know, I think my involvement has been more out of luck and chance
right
than a deliberate plan, so to speak. And you know, you're just there at the right moment, at at the right time. It wasn't a deliberate, you know, ambition, you know. But I remember the first intranet I ever got asked to do some work on, I think was back around 97 98. It was Ericsson.
Okay.
The Ericsson intranet, that's it. And you know, it was gas to see those early intranets, because they were totally wild places. They had little postmen running across the screen, you know, throwing their hands out at you saying, "Contact me." You know, everybody had gone mad. You know, all the programmers had gone mad creating crazy features. It was you know, it was like a place that you visit on LSD or something like that. Not that I've ever taken LSD or anything like that.
No, of course
not,
yeah.
But, and they have, you know, the funny thing is, Paul, they haven't got much better.
that doesn't surprise me.
You know, a typical intranet is like Chernobyl. You know, it's there's lots of stuff there and there is life, but it's kind of toxic and loads of crap spewing all over the place and stuff that hasn't been looked at in 40 years. And, you know, so few organizations take the internet seriously. And it's still, amazes me. You know, when we look at the whole revolution that is the digital revolution, it has really been a consumer revolution.
Mm.
You know, when you think of all the tools, all the, whether it's Facebook or WhatsApp or the iPhone, they weren't designed for the organization.
No.
You know, if you went back 30 years and you met somebody from a large organization, and they had great, you'd say, oh, you've got that, you can do video, they had the first mobile phone, they had all the cool stuff. And mm-hmm. now you meet somebody from a large organization and you sympathize with them. It's like you want to give them a blanket or something like that. you know, they've got crap. Like, organizations have just not invested in their own staff, and as a result of that, you see all sorts of, they're becoming less efficient, they're sitting in lots of cash, and they won't make themselves more efficient. It's a real head-scratcher as to why.
I mean, it just, you're absolutely right, and I am going to rename this episode, Is Your Intranet Chernobyl? I think that needs to now be the title of the episode. But one of the things that kind of really strikes me is, if you think about running a successful business, it basically falls into two categories: increase revenue and reduce costs, right? And traditionally, the way that we've used digital has all been about increasing revenue by bringing in new customers, increasing, you know, brand loyalty, you know, average order value and that kind of stuff. And we pretty much ignored the reducing cost side, you know, beyond maybe some fulfillment type stuff and that kind of thing. Any kind of productivity benefits that it might have just seem to be largely ignored by organizations.
Mm. Yeah, I think, Paul, what organizations bought kind of hook, line and sinker was the sell of the technology industry.
Yeah.
That all you really have to do is buy and install the technology, and then, hey presto, the magic cost savings will just flow.
Yeah. We install SharePoint and you're sorted.
Yeah.
Yeah. We've recently redesigned a large company's intranet.
Have you?
Yeah. When I say redesigned, we were asked to basically tart it up. This company will remain nameless on this.
Yeah,
show.
That's probably good.
And the work we've done, you know, it looks great. But I remember getting the original brief, and basically I said, "Yep, we can do this, but I think we need to do an exercise in what are your users actually using on this extremely busy Chernobyl-like intranet." And the response was really along the lines of, well, we can't really change that because of the technology.
Mm.
And it's like, so we just went, all right, then we'll do you, we'll make it look nicer. But it wasn't really what was required.
And it's always been a problem with intranet. So I remember, again, going back to the late 90s, which is where I did a little bit of intranet work. It was all portals, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, God.
Oh, the portal. Yeah, I had a definition for portals. A portal is an intranet that costs you four times more.
Yeah. Oh, that's so true. And, yeah, like you say, it hasn't really moved on that much. I mean, we used to have some painful intranet projects, Marcus. Do you remember?
Yes.
Vaguely. You've tried to block it out, haven't you?
Yeah. We've only done a few. As you said, Paul, I really like working on internal stuff.
Yeah.
And the odd opportunity comes through and I get all excited about it. We don't always... we tend not to win that many. I don't
know.
Such is life. But yeah, this one we did.
Anyway, before we get into this properly, because I want to talk about intranet, sure, but I want to look at the bigger picture as well. So we're just going to do a little sponsor slot before we get into the discussion proper. I want to mention Media Temple again, who have been a huge support for this season of the podcast, and we're hugely grateful to them. Probably, I would have thought they're the most popular hosting platform out there for designers, developers, and kind of creative people. I struggle to think of another one that would get anywhere close to them, really. And there is damn good reasons for that. They offer such a great hosting environment, especially their grid account. You can have this single grid account and you can host your own site and then up to 100 different client, you know, sites as well. And that's, you know, hugely beneficial. Because basically the grid is hundreds of different servers all kind of working together to ensure that your site stays online no matter what kind of load hits it and that kind of stuff. I mean, they do loads of other hosting options too, all kinds of different stuff that we've talked about in previous episodes. And they integrate, they've got integrated support for things like Google Apps and that kind of stuff. They've even got virtual private servers if you need that, etc., etc. To find out more about Media Temple, you can go to boagworld.com/Media Temple. That'll tell you all that you need to know. If you're unhappy with your current hosting provider, for example, if their support sucks, then I highly recommend checking out Media Temple. I use them myself, and not because they give it to me for free. I part with real money for this. But you actually can do better than me, because if you use the promo code BOAG, B-O-A-G, you can get 25% off of your web hosting, which is deeply unfair. But there you go. That's life. Yeah, okay, Jerry, sorry. I just wanted to do that. We got too into this conversation.
No problem. BOAG.com.
Yeah, let's talk about kind of this whole area of designing user experiences for your employees, for the employees within organizations. I mean, we've already touched a little bit on intranets. I mean, are you involved with other things beyond intranets? Because there's so many of these systems.
Yeah. This is where does what start and where does what stop, and yeah, you know, and how do people understand, you know, so I think we're using the word, I would use the word very, very broadly. Others are talking about the digital workplace and others are talking about the digital work space, you know, and ultimately we're, you know, employees are, you know, on the internet, or whether people are on the web, they're not even thinking web or internet. No. They're on Facebook, or they're chatting with their friends, or they're finding people, or they're, you know, they're getting a sales PowerPoint ready for an important meeting tomorrow. And they're not really differentiating, is, you know, the first two steps is on the internet, mm-hmm. but the second two steps is in the digital media management system. You know,
yeah,
that's not the way employees think, but it is, unfortunately, the way, you know, somebody pulled me aside a couple of years ago at a meeting and say, you know, to me, you know, those things you were talking about, that digital media management system. Yeah, I says, yeah. He says, that's a tool. You know, I just want you to understand that. And we look after that. We're from IT. We look after the tools. The other stuff, that's content and pages. That's not us, you know. you know that. And he was very happy once I understood that was a tool.
Yeah.
Because he likes tools. And, you know, and that sort of anal type of stuff that happens so often is so destructive of a good experience of you know, somebody just doing what they need to do. I think that's where it's ultimately going. So whatever word we use, you know, whatever we want to call it, it is about people finding people or checking up their pay details or getting, selecting the best training for their career or checking up how much overtime they've done, you know, this month. It's, you know, or finding an engine diagram, you know, that's the right one, that's in the right format that mm-hmm. they can import. You know, it's the ultimately we have to go beyond what the thing that we, so to speak, are in charge of, and try and help people complete the thing that they've started to try and do within our section. You know, I remember seeing a great T-shirt in Belfast once, and the front was the Titanic, and on the back was, it was all right when it left here, you know. And that's a kind of, sometimes the view, you know, in internet spaces, once they can send you into the system, even though it's a horrible, they've their job done, or they click. And we have to move beyond that. And it's a challenge, but you know, that bringing the enterprise together, you know, is we gotta solve that problem, because otherwise we don't solve efficiency and we don't solve productivity.
I mean, one of the big questions is, you know, why do we need to care about these kinds of employee experiences? It's not like that, you know, I guess a part of the attitude that management have about it is, well, you know, employee has to use the systems we give them. They're not going to go to a competitor like a client would. And so as a result, they don't really invest in it in the same way. But I guess this is where you get into the productivity issues, isn't it?
Yeah, and you know, that's a real, dare I say, Stalinist, you know, view of the world, which is quite current among senior management, in most places, in many ways. But you know, it's down to the most basic principles of, if you have a guy shoveling coal, you don't want to give him a teaspoon, you know, like to shovel the coal with, you know, like. The right tools will make people more productive, and it's not simply about saving costs, because it's the same people who, you know, who come up with ideas and help sell stuff. And it's about, you know, so employee productivity is not simply a cost, although that's an important element. The word is productivity. You know, and you're productive about new products or whatever. So it's the basic essence of the efficiency of the organization and the ability of the organization to organize. Like, I remember years ago we did the BBC intranet, and every time we do a large intranet, find people is one of the key tasks that comes up in the data. And the guy or the team that was running the BBC intranet at the time were telling me, they were saying, and this was maybe 10 years ago or so now, but they were saying that in 10 years before that, find people was relatively easy because you just had the staff directory. But he said, and I think this was around 2005. You know, and he was talking about 1995. But he said in 2005, he said, you know, half of the people that we need don't even work for the BBC.
Yeah, of course.
You know, and I think they were ahead of the curve in the sense of most, you know, the independent contractors, that many of the people that you actually need today, you know, they're not employees, you know, they're independent. Mm-hmm. So finding and bringing that together, that find people or find an expert, is a crucial, you know, foundational challenge of the modern distributed network-based type of organization. And that's, you know, that's a real, and so few invest in it. You know, they'll go out and do their LinkedIn to get a new job, but they won't do an internal LinkedIn for the job that they have.
Yeah.
You know, people will invest more time in their external profile, in their LinkedIn profile, which is really their profile to get their next job, than they invest in the profile for their current job. And there's a reason for that. You know, you're not incentivized to be found. You know, you're not incentivized. Most organizations say they want collaboration, and they want that cross-disciplinary collaboration, because the challenges of a lot of organizations today cannot be solved with products that just emanate from silos, from, you know, certain divisions. You know, we're dealing with a very large organization now that's saying that the type of things that they're facing, they do a lot of macroeconomics and analytics, and they're saying the type of problems that they need to address and they need to bring solutions to their customers to are quite complicated. They're not just about agriculture. You know, they also take in the environment and chemical, you know, so the problems seem to become, the problems that organizations face seem to become much more complex, demanding many different actors and skill sets to actually solve them. But then they can't bring those group disparate groups of people together easily because they're structured like silos, and they actually punish people who collaborate across silos in many hours. Like you get slapped on the wrist by your manager saying, hey, you know, don't be talking to those guys in Poland.
Yeah. You know. And that's so true, isn't it? The number of, you know, to say that these tools are just about productivity is quite a narrow view. I think they're also about, you know, communication, as you said, and innovation. And I think to some degree, customer service, which I think is a thing that seems to be forgotten, that, you know, if you've got good internal tools, then you can offer better customer service. There was a great article that Lisa Reichelt posted ages ago. I don't even know whether it's online anymore, but where she was talking about her experience of checking in at an airport or, you know, for a flight. And the person she was talking to was fighting with this system that was in front of her to do what it was that Lisa needed to do. And, you know, because it was some horrible kind of almost pre-GUI interface. And the woman had a massive big book, not a kind of manual from the company, but a set of notes that she's made to make it easier for her to use this system.
Yeah, Oh, it's horrendous. I mean, these systems were like torture chambers, you know. I mean, they were, you know, but they were bought by the people who never used them.
Yep.
Yeah.
You know, and it's a tragedy. it's extraordinary, and it is a massive failure of senior management who abdicated responsibility to IT.
Yeah.
You know, because they were too afraid to plead ignorance, you know, to say, I don't understand this, I better get to understand this. Instead, they just threw the budget at IT with the assumption that IT would look after that techie stuff, which I don't understand. So we've essentially got an abdication of management. Mm. Most of these internal spaces are not managed. Mm. It's launch and leave territory, you know, and that's why ladies like that are left with creating their own books. And you know, in all these places now where customers, you know, have given their address or their details, and, you know, and then they have to give them again, you know, and again and again and again. And how annoying that is, and how the customers now, if they come across a disconnected organization, well, if they have any chance at all, they leave. So these disconnected, you know, not coherent, incoherent organizations are going to struggle. Like, and as we see, I saw this article on the age of organizations in the 30s. Seemingly, it was somewhere in the region of 60 to 70 years an organization could hope to live for. And now it's down to about, you know, 18 years. And I just thought about, look at the lifespan of humans in that time, of people. It has gone the opposite way. It has gone, like, around then it was around 30 or 40 years, the average human life span. Now it's 60 to 70 years. So humans are living longer. Organizations are living much less. Organizations are sick.
At least in a kind of what we're talking about here are kind of commercial enterprises and organizations with employees. At least what we're talking about here is if some of this, there are reasons why you would invest in making change, from productivity being one. But this is reminding me of a conversation I was having with Chris earlier in the week, where we are talking to a university, and university senior management has a very similar view to senior management everywhere around the world. Why should I invest in this stuff? And this is, it's a little bit off piece, but this is about what we were discussing, was about student experiences. And we seem to think that it's kind of a no-brainer that you should improve a student experience. But the arguments that are kind of coming back here are, well, they seem to be using them okay. We've got people beating down the door every year to get into this institution. We don't need to do anything. And it's quite a hard one to come up with reasons why they should invest. in this particular case, at least with from a commercial organisation point of view, there are definitely good reasons for doing it.
Yeah, it's a kind of, why should I bother doing my job if I don't have to? You know, like, if I'm getting paid my monthly salary, you know, why should I, all this management stuff is hard. I know I'm called a manager, but, you know, like, do I really have to manage? Yeah. You know, like, I mean, it's so extraordinary. Well, I once heard, you know, somebody said to me, what is an organization if it is not organized? And they said, a university. Ooh. You know, like, the universities are the worst of the worst of the worst. The most ego-based, disorganized places that I've come across in all my career. You know, the vanity that pervades our, and it is, like, as you say, Marcus, oh, they're beating down the doors. Aren't we so great? Mm-hmm. Aren't they lucky to have us? Type in the, it's that sort of deep arrogance that they have, and it's difficult to answer that question. Why should I have to do my job when I don't have to? You know, when I'm getting, because they don't care. You know, so whether people can find, so universities tend to be very, very difficult to deal with, particularly in Europe where they're more funded. We find quite a bit more success in the States where there's more. We worked with a very large organization there, our university, that were very focused on these things and efficiency of the, you know, and allowing the students to get their work plans and stuff like that, because it's more competitive there. But when you've got a monopoly, why should you bother? And it's hard to answer that unless you've got somebody who actually genuinely does want to do their job. And if they want to do their job, then it's because that's what managers do, you know? You're supposed to make things efficient. If something is crap, you're supposed to make it better. You know, you're not supposed to be proud of the fact that nobody can find anything, that what they find is 2 years out of date, and that even the stuff that they find that's up to date is unreadable. You know, that's not supposed to be something you should be proud of. But
and having 10,
you know,
logins for different systems.
And having 10 logins and all. But the thing is, that most of these managers, they don't even know that because they don't use it.
No.
You know, so they don't have any awareness. They don't have any consciousness that it's this terrible. You know, they think it's okay because, you know, it's, the house isn't burning down, because they never use it.
I mean, that goes back to a little bit what you were saying about that they just see it as a technology issue and not a management issue.
Yeah.
Because, you know, the truth is that all of these things, you know, the technology is there just to facilitate management, you know, better management. And so if they're not taking ownership of it and they're not moving it forward, you're right, they're not doing their job. And also, you take something like a university, Marcus, going back to what you were saying. I mean, those organizations have been around for hundreds and hundreds of years, right? So they have to take the long-term view. They have to be looking ahead. And the truth is, if they don't address these kinds of issues, and by the way, it takes forever for a university to do these kinds of things. If they don't start thinking about those things now, then by the time it becomes a crisis point, which it will, as our higher education market becomes more competitive, then they're going to be stuffed.
Then people will not be beating down the door.
Yeah, indeed.
It's a while to wait.
Unfortunately, it's a while to wait, and it's the reason, Marcus, you've kind of put your finger. It's the reason why nothing is happening in intranets, because management doesn't care.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they don't care. You know, they don't care if it takes ages for their employees to book a meeting room. They don't care because you know, they see employees' time as elastic, they're on salaries, you know, so and you know, there's a macho culture in modern management about that you're only a real manager if you're firing people.
Yeah, the, you know, Alan Sugar school of management.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That you're only a real manager if you're firing people, and they don't care about making it more efficient for those that are left. Those that are left should feel lucky they have a job.
Yeah.
You know. And as a result of that, you know, we see the good people are leaving after 2 or 3 years, and, you know, so we see this is why organizations are sick. I mean, organizations are living now to about 18 years old. You know, if that was humans, we'd have epidemics. We'd be trying to figure out what's wrong. Like, what diseases are they suffering from? And how do we, you know, how has management lifespan dropped so dramatically in 30 or 40 years? And equally, we're looking at productivity. Overall productivity and growth has not been fantastic in the last 10 or 20 years in the overall economic structure. So, you know, these people should be nowhere. The only thing that's growing today at any fast rate is senior management bonuses. I mean, that is the only thing that's growing at pace, that has really grown extremely quickly in the last 15 years. And that in itself tells a story.
Yeah. So, I mean, how do we get them to care? How do we get them to take, you know, these kinds of productivity communication tools seriously?
I think we're almost at a tipping point, and I think it's driven by the new generation as much as you know, the millennials or even the newer generations coming out who are just not willing to accept this. You know, and I think the phenomenon of bring your own device has really shocked IT as well. You know, IT had a real lock on everything, and IT was like you know, whatever. It just use the thing. You know, they would force technology onto staff, whether they liked it or not. Mm-hmm. I mean, I saw a study recently that said that IT were the only department in the company that never had any interaction with customers, and they're also probably the only department in the organization that never has any interaction with employees. The nature of IT is anti-customer experience. It's not in their culture to remotely be interested about the usability of and that corrosive traditional culture of IT has really created monstrosities of technologies.
Oh, yeah.
But that's gradual. Sometimes this thing can really change quickly, and I get a sense of an awareness driven by younger people, by bringing in their iPhones and their Apples and stuff like that. That there's a gradual shift, but it has to ultimately be founded in, you know, I think measuring consumption. I think we have old models in organization where we measure production, we measure the generation of the document, or you know, and the publication of that document, or the creation of the tool and the launch of that tool. Mm-hmm. and we never measure use. And I think when we get to use, when we start measuring use, then we're going to see how awful it is to use these things. But if we have the old metrics of which are, I bought it and I launched it, that's my job done.
Yeah.
You know, or I wrote it. Like most people internally, you know, findability is a huge issue. Search is appalling, but it's not really search's problem. Because the problem at core is, people don't want their content to get found, because if it gets found, they get more work. In a lot of cases, so there's no incentive to be found. You don't get a reward structure for findability. Like if you're a small shoe shop, you want to get found on Google.
Mm.
You're desperate to get found, because if you get found, you sell shoes. If you get found in an internet, you often get more work.
Yeah, people ask you questions.
People ask you questions, and your boss says, what are you wasting your time answering those questions for? You know, so there's a disincentive to actually get found. So people often go out of their way, and I've seen this, go out of their way to de-metadata. It's like de-louse the content of metadata. You know, take DDT and knock all the metadata out of it that might have made it findable. So how is enterprise search ever going to work in that environment?
Yeah, and it comes back, you're right, it comes back to incentivization, doesn't it? And structuring correctly. So, I mean, the kind of project mentality that exists as well, you're spot on. This idea of people are measured on, did this project come in on time and on budget? irrespective of the fact that nobody then ever uses it because it's crap. Yeah. But that doesn't, you know, that still comes back to, well, how do we convince executives to do this kind of thing? And I agree that there's kind of a tipping point, but I've seen some quite imaginative solutions to this.
What have you seen?
I'll tell you one that really impressed me was one organization. Again, it was a university that wanted to invest in some of these internal systems. And, you know, there were so many major issues of common, you know, common systems like finding people, like expense claims. And it was a university, so there was student stuff. But instead, they focused on the approval process for expenses, because those expenses were approved by management. So they improved the tool that managers used, so that managers could see the value of investing and improving these tools, because it was something they actually used rather than the one that their staff used. It kind of showed them what it was capable of, and it worked really well for them. Of managers go, oh, well, this is worth spending a bit of money on this. Things get much better, you know? I quite like that kind of thinking.
That's interesting. That can, but there's an unfortunate paradox there as well, Paul, in that what we find is a lot of the new tools for management, these CRM systems and stuff like that, they actually make it harder for the people on the ground because they're demanding more information of them.
Yeah.
So in order to feed the management monster of data, the sales we saw a new sales management system where a section of it was lead generation. And recording a lead generation. And in the previous environment, sales reps had to go through 3 steps to put in a lead into the system. And this new system, they had to go through 13 steps. You know, and the people installing it couldn't even conceptualize that was a problem, you know, because they'd never met a sales rep, they'd never talked. Their customer was senior management. So sometimes what you have is it gets worse because senior management are demanding more data and more dashboards and views, etc. Mm-hmm. That is creating more effort in the contribution of stuff lower. But that's one thing that I saw worked fairly well in the internet a number of years ago was a Danish internet where they had figured out a type of algorithm for up-to-dateness of pages. It was pretty simple whether it had been viewed and edited in the last 30 days. Mm-hmm. But they had some sort of a mechanism to judge the freshness of a page. And they connected that with the classical smileys, you know, the smiley, nice big smile if it was up to date, and mm-hmm. and then it would gradate downwards to a real red, horrible face if it was out of date. But the really clever thing that they did was they put the manager's picture beside the smiley.
Genius!
The overall person responsible for that department or that, and that had a quite an impact quite quickly.
What a good idea!
But it is similar in a way. It reminded me that how do we get management to care in a way is a challenge. But even this, I think a lot of managers, they just don't realize as well. It's not that they're setting out to make life horrible or that it's their life's ambition. But I find, you know, the obvious things in a way, the big things that have had biggest success for me, whether it's intranets or whatever, is coming up with clear, important tasks like sales presentations or whatever that really matter to the business. You know, not trivial things like the lunch menu. The lunch menu is important, but you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Stuff that matters about creating an engine or you know, stuff that really matters. And then, you know, doing your testing with your engineers or your sales reps or whatever and just videoing and putting a video together of 3 or 4 of those engineers mm-hmm. and then showing and spreading that, you know, bringing the experience, because they just don't see, you know, and that lack of empathy. And then when people see, is that what it's really like? Yeah, that's what it's really like for your You know, we see studies from the American Marketing Association, 90% of marketing collateral, and a lot of that is on the internet, is never used. It's no use to the salespeople. Mm-hmm. Salespeople on average spending 30 hours a month creating presentations that marketers really should have created for them.
Yeah.
You know, or in majority. So there's, you know, there's a disconnect between sales and marketing. And then you look at these systems and there's like 200 presentations for this particular sales and all of them out of date, you know, because they were never cleaned out, et cetera, et cetera. And nobody's measured, you know, so much money is being lost. Some organizations could be so much more efficient, sell so much more, create products so much faster. I mean, this is the essence. The organization's future is digital. Like, and digital is just a landscape. You got to build the houses. You got to make the digital place livable, and you got to have sewers. You got to have things that work. But we've digital in many cases full of stuff that doesn't work,
and nobody cares about.
And nobody cares. Yeah. And it'll happen. It'll change. You know, because they'll have to. Because they'll die out even faster. You know, it'll have to happen. Just like, you know, 100 years ago, the revolution in, you know, Ford, you know, and companies like of the you know, the factory. Somebody made a great definition of knowledge workers. It said, you know, knowledge workers work in decision factories. They make decisions,
yeah.
You know, and we really need a revolution in that decision factory. How can we make better, more efficient decisions, whether it's a meeting or what, or whatever, or a sales call or whatever, you know? But I don't know. We struggle to convince them, but it's going to happen at some stage.
It's almost Darwinism in the end, isn't it?
It is.
That, you know, that if people don't begin to address these issues, they're just going to die out.
Yeah.
Okay, we're running out of time, Jerry, and I want to just ask you, because I know there's a lot of people that are listening to this that will be grinning from ear to ear, that will be, you know, loving hearing you, you know, bash management and marketing and IT, and in fact, pretty much everybody. You're on a real roll today. But, you know, and because they work in a digital team somewhere within an organization, what can they actually do to start bringing about change? Because it's, you know, it's great to have a good old moan about, you
measure
know.
Use. Yeah. Measure use. You know, you got to measure the use of the environment. You got to feed, and you it'll be 12 months, 18 months, 2 years. You got to start feeding into the management system use. You know, our lack of use, our inability to use, or, you know, 80% of our sales rep don't use.
Yeah.
You know, this system right now. That's a use metric, right? You know, of the 20% who do use it, it takes them, you know, an average of 10 minutes, and 40% of them fail, and another 30% of them actually find the wrong sales presentation.
Mm-hmm.
Measure the consumption.
Is that, and I think different, in my experience, different managers respond to different things. Some respond to that kind of hard data that you just outlined there, which is great and wonderful. And others respond on a more kind of empathy level to those kinds of showreel videos that you talked about earlier, those stories.
But see, Paul, it's the perfect combination.
Exactly.
If you're measuring use and you say, we got a 60% failure rate here for sales, and let me just show you.
Yeah.
Or, you know, and then let me show you. Or actually, I'd show the video first. Then. So let me watch these three salespeople try and get the latest sales president. Watch that. That is reflective of a 60% failure rate.
Yeah.
Right. There are so the combination, absolutely, that combination, but the two together to me are the real ways to drive the change. So this is solvable. This is this is, you know, we are sitting on a gold mine, but we're managing it like a coal mine. I often say that. And when we when we really get a grip on this space, there's going to be amazing stuff happening because there is so, it is so ripe for like the stuff that you would, Marcus and Paul, that, you know, you'd see out there that, you know, Facebook does or whoever does or Amazon does, you know, you only have to do 100 of that in a digital space to be a hero.
I know, and do you know, that is why I love doing this kind of internal work so much, that increasingly now when we have clients coming to us for external, you know, customer facing work, you know, what they've got is pretty reasonable these days, you know, so you have to work a lot harder to create those big returns because, you know, it's a reasonably high starting point. But this is, you know, when you look at enterprise stuff or back end stuff, it almost like feels like you're stepping back to the late 90s, and there are so many quick and obvious wins, and so you look like a hero really quickly.
Yeah, like, I mean, it is like that, and there's some, and it's so hard for the people who have to the work in these internal teams, because they know what the right thing is to do.
Yeah.
I've not gone into any organization and really told any team really stuff that they didn't already know. It's just that they're stuck, you know, they're not getting the budget, they're not getting the, you know, and it's, when is it going to change? And when, but, you know, to me, you know, feed the empathy and the data, but the use, you got to build up the use of the environment and get that into, because many of these managers have no data on the actual use of the environment. I think that is what will transform it, if anything will.
And also, I'm a great fan of, you know, not going for the big ask of management. You know, don't ask them to pay for a huge, you know, restructuring of the whole of the intranet, you know, new technology, all the rest of it. Just do a very simple proof of concept on something like a people finder or some aspect of it, and then show the usage before or after in order to prove the benefit that this provides. And then you can kind of work from there, really.
Yeah, I think, you know, in general, as we've all found, the days of the massive big redesign and things like that are over largely. And you know, so many people have been burned, either bought in the public websites and of these huge, big technology projects that by the time they get launched are out of date, you know, and we got, like, I've seen more progress over the years by working with the systems that already existed and patching them up and fixing them in some ways or creating some workarounds within them than in the purchase of new systems. It's often surprising what you can do with the already existing system if you've got a good, you know, IT team. And that is, you know, I know I've complained about IT, but IT, you know, are still the make or break of this. If you, you know, if oftentimes the best combination is a really tightly collaborating communications and IT team. That's where I've seen real change happen, is when the two of them were working sympathetically and understanding each other's needs and demands. You know, so if you get really IT in board, it's surprising what they can do with the existing systems to adapt them and make them simpler. So, you know, that sort of, forget about that, as you say, that big ask, you know, and deliver the metrics, but the metrics of use, I think, is what, because if you don't measure it right, you're not going to get the change in thinking and behavior.
Wonderful, Jerry. I mean, again, this is something that we could talk about forever, and I'm really quite excited about it. It almost feels like the next frontier of user experience is dealing with some of these internal systems that exist. So, you know, I'm fascinated to see, you know, how things improve over the coming, you know, years, really. And like you're saying, there is such a big difference between the quality of the consumer facing tools that are out there with the enterprise level tools. Which brings me nicely on to our final sponsor for the day, which is Harvest. Harvest is a time tracking tool that does a lot more than just time tracking, really. And this kind of, for me, really drives home the difference between the internal systems large organizations have and the really good tools that are out there for smaller organizations, small agencies, freelancers, people like that. You know, I compare something like Sage to something like Free Agent, and it's just a kind of world apart. I don't know why it is. The larger you get, the shittier your tools have to be. But Harvest is a great example of one of those great business tools that absolutely pays for itself. Beautifully designed interface that's so easy to use. Really simple time tracking, but does a lot more than that. It provides some really powerful reports without people having to enter a load of additional data, going back to what Jerry was saying earlier. And all of that data then can be, you know, used to create really fast online invoicing, so that you can create great professional invoices just off of the data that you've been doing as part of your time tracking. It can even manage things like expenses as well, and it works great with a load of the really cool business software that's beginning to emerge, that's a new generation of tool that is so much better. So it integrates well with, you know, some of the great project management tools like Basecamp, but finance systems like Free Agent I mentioned earlier, or customer support software. And yeah, it'll also integrate into some of these cloud-based CRMs, productivity apps, proposal software, analytic tools, you know, it just goes on and on. So you can check out Harvest by going to boagworld.com/harvest and take advantage of really a very solid business tool that is beautifully designed and works seamlessly. You can get a 30-day free trial by using the code there is a 30-day free trial for anyone, but if you use the code BOAG when you sign up, BOAG, you'll receive 50% off that first month as well, which is superb. Now, Jerry, I don't know whether you remember from the last time you were on the show, but we have to endure one of Marcus's jokes. It's punishment for coming on the show, I'm afraid. And that's Marcus, okay. You ruined this by posting this joke in Slack, so I've heard it already.
Oh, I did, didn't I? Forget that you... Yeah, sorry.
I look.
You do look, don't you?
But I'm sure Jerry will laugh heartedly and completely sincerely at this is from
Ian Lasky, our supplier of jokes over the years, over the many years. He sent me a few, and this is one of them. The managing director of Dulux Paints has died of hypothermia while trekking across the Antarctic. Paramedics said he could have done with another coat.
Oh.
I do quite like that one, actually. At least it wasn't an Irish joke, Marcus. That would be very inappropriate.
I wouldn't do that.
That wasn't too bad.
It was all right, wasn't it? It was all right, okay. Yeah. So, Jerry, thank you so much for joining us on the show again. A really interesting topic, as always. Where can people find out more about you?
Well, the Customer Care Words website, which is the stuff we do that analyze behavior and identify those tasks for employees or the external customers. That's the stuff. And then jerrymcgovern.com for more the speaking and the articles and stuff like that. So. Mm.
I got to say, your blog is an absolute pleasure to read. It's if you think that Jerry has ranted on this podcast, you just need to read some of his blog posts. They're great. Absolutely wonderful. So next week, we've got probably the coolest named guest we've ever had in Golden Krishna joining us next week, who is the author of an excellent book that I absolutely raved about, called The Best Interface is No Interface. I confess that I am a bit of a fanboy when it comes to Golden. So if next week's show's a bit simpering, you'll know why. I can't wait to talk about this really exciting area. But for now, thank you very much, Jerry. Thank you guys for listening, and we'll talk to you again next week. Bye.
Thank you, Paul. Bye. Thank you, Marcus.
Bye.
Bonnie Brown.